Mr. Bookbinder, I see you're in here, but your video's not on.
That helps.
I'm asking him to turn his video on. He may have stepped away.
I'm always happy when somebody screws it up other than me. Gives me more confidence.
Let me call him on his cell phone. Mute myself real quick.
Got it. Oh, sorry. Sorry, we had just... I didn't click the button saying, you know, yes, I acknowledge it's being live streamed. My apologies to everybody.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit is now open according to law. God save the United States in this honorable court.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. So just a reminder of a few things. Even though we are virtual and Zooming and all of that, the rules all still apply. That nice big clock, that still applies. So please follow all of that. Please answer our questions. All of that still applies. The one addition is to recall that you cannot video or audio record this, and that you should mute yourself when you are not the one speaking. But unmute yourself when you are. I know that's complicated, but that's the world we live in. So with that, we will proceed with the one case we're hearing today virtually. It's case number 22-60225, Midship Pipeline versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And we'll begin with, is it Mr. Lowe?
Okay. Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court, Robert Lowe for Midship Pipeline Company. This court properly stayed the commission's cost assessment order, finding that the order was likely an untenable administrative overreach. This court should now proceed to grant the petition for review and hold that the order was an exercise of power beyond those granted by Congress. As this court held in Enable Mississippi River Transmission, in enacting the Natural Gas Act, Congress was careful to preserve traditional state powers. This court said Congress drew the Natural Gas Act meticulously with respect for state powers, not to handicap or to dilute them. And consistent with that holding, every court that has addressed the issue, and FERC itself, all agree that Congress left property damage issues to traditional state law remedies. American Energy, the Sixth Circuit said there's no power that FERC has over damages. DC Consolidated Gas likewise held the same. And tellingly, FERC, in an earlier stage of this matter in May of last year, expressly held that it has no authority under the Natural Gas Act on damage matters, even when they're related to certificate performance. At pages 66 and 67 of the Joint Appendix, the Commission held that the Natural Gas Act does not authorize, and let me quote, does not authorize the Commission to assess property damage and or direct payment of compensation for such damage. That is exactly. Counsel,
so nobody really disputes that. The question, I guess, is this fish or fowl? I mean, the part of the order that's being challenged ordered the ALJ to go and determine the various costs of various options for remediation. I mean, that's not really ordering damages, is it? I mean, help me a little bit with how those two things are equivalent.
Sure, Your Honor. First, that order from last year on page 6067 is not limited to actually, it says the commission has no authority to assess property damages or to direct payment of compensation. So both things, it has no authority to assess the property damages or direct the payment, and said that those responsibilities are outside the authority granted by Congress.
But it's not clear to me that that's what they're asking to do. What seems to strikes me that and under the basic powers granted by Congress, that the agency has some authority to inform itself with regard to its basic obligation under the certificate to enforce it. And the question is, what is a reasonable enforcement activity? And maybe one more comment. And then it seems to me that it's quite reasonable to ask that somebody calls that out, because crossing it out also defines what is to be done. And then the question of reasonableness factors in. It is not inevitable at all that this has anything to do with what private remedies that the landowner here has under Oklahoma law. I don't see how that steps on that at all. They came up with a number, but that number is for their usage in determining the reasonableness under the certificate of the action taken.
So let me specifically...
I'm skipping past the threshold question here of whether this is right, but we'll come back to that.
We have jurisdiction, but go ahead and answer Judge Higginbotham.
Yeah, no, that's the crucial central question, Judge Higginbotham. So they're citing their power to investigate as necessary and proper to see if there's been a violation of the orders or whether complying with the orders. But everyone agrees that therefore it needs to be, what they're ordering has to be related to the question of whether we're complying with the order, here the certificate of compliance. And in your question suggests that the costs are somehow related to whether we're complying with the certificate. But the commission's only statutory role in this present context is the determination what restoration work remains to be done to fully comply with the certificate. And everyone agrees the work remains to be done. And then whether Midship has submitted a plan for finalizing and finishing the remaining work that FERC requested. It's a detailed plan going through what we're gonna do. FERC's only role here is to review the work that remains to be done, to review our plan, and to determine whether our plan would satisfy the standards of the certificate. None of that turns on the cost of the work to be done. For example, the certificate could require there be topsoil.
If Sandy Creek is saying, well, you want to do X, but we think you should do Y, why can't they look at the cost of that and say, well, Sandy Creek wants Y and it costs about the same, so we'll just order Y. That makes sense. Even though they don't have to do that, they can certainly look at what do the owners of the property think, what is the argument? What do you all argue, Midship, about what you want to do? Does it make sense what they're arguing? Your restoration makes total sense and would cost less. Their restoration costs a lot more. Can't they just look at that and kind of just the big picture of what they're doing?
Respectfully, no, Your Honor. What's at issue is enforcing the certificate of compliance, the order. So the order sets out what the standards are for what we need to do. So if it set out that we needed to put in this amount of topsoil at this grade of topsoil or this level of or type of vegetation.
You've done that repeatedly, and even gone before the Congress, and you've got a whole string of situations where you say you did it, and you represent you did it, and then you degrade, we'll go back and do some more. But that's a real powerful history here that you're skipping past. And that to me is a, it seems to me that someone has got to figure out what's caused. Let me give you a quick hypothetical. I've got a large ranch, and I've got a decorative fence that's been there because my grandparents are there, and it's a very valuable fence all the way around my place. And the pipeline comes in, and they tear up a bunch of my fence, but it's only one part of it. And so they say, we'll try to, and so I say, no. Well, I want you to replace the entire fence because I want to, the landowner says, I'm entitled to have the aesthetic beauty of my original fence. And because it's a fence, it's a fence. Now, the cost of that, the old fence and the new fence is very high, large difference. It seems to me that in discharging the obligation, under the certificate, to restoration, what's reasonable, that costing information is very important. There are all kinds of variations of that.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, there's two stages of this. First, when they're deciding to grant the certificate, they put in particular terms, and we can challenge those if we want to at that stage. And second, regarding a particular property, for us to get into that property and to put in the pipeline, either we need
It's after the certificate stage that they is granted that the pipeline company comes in, does the damage.
Right. So the certificate then gives us the license to go to the landowner and say, we're going to perform this work. Let's work out a deal. Or we go to the state or federal court to have a taking eminent domain proceeding where they'll claim that us doing this work, performing it, is going to be taking their property and seek a certain level of just compensation. So perhaps your fence example, right, could be part of that just compensation process. Look, once you destroy that beautiful museum quality fence, there's just compensation requires us to pay for the entire fence. That's part of that. This is not what's at issue here. This is a question of certificate of compliance regarding land restoration generally. The certificate sets out standards for removal of debris, for fixing the soil grade, for runoff, irrigation, etc. These are all things that are incorporated in great detail in the certificate. It's not rocket science.
Let's back up to jurisdiction, because the reality is, as we know, when you actually have a hearing on facts, a lot of stuff happens. And we don't know what that outcome will be. So why do we have jurisdiction now to preclude something that might make sense when you're actually, in the bucket going through it? Why do we have jurisdiction? Because we're still kind of in the middle. Now, once they determine whatever they determine, then yes, we have jurisdiction. But why do we have jurisdiction now under Energy Transfer et al.?
This court, this matter is ripe for review. The standard set out for the applicable judicial review statute is section 717R subsection B, which says there's judicial review to determine whether a party is aggrieved by a commission's order. So it's not a question of finality, it's a question of whether the party is currently being aggrieved. Now, FERC cites cases
parties are aggrieved all day long when they're in trial courts. I used to be a state trial judge and I had a lot of parties looking very aggrieved whenever I ruled on anything. I don't think that qualifies. So you don't even know, frankly, whether you would be aggrieved by what they said.
But our complaint is not about what the outcome of that process will be. Our complaint is that the process itself is beyond the statutory authority of the commission. This is not a case like Total, where everyone conceded there was a legitimate hearing, a legitimate process, but they were concerned about what the outcome of that process would be, and that might be illegitimate. So there it was in the future, and it was speculative. Also, in Total, this court said there was no argument that the process itself was ultra vires. That is the entirety of our entire legal claim here, is that the statute does not authorize FERC to engage in cost assessment determinations.
How is Midship immediately harmed by this order?
So, Your Honor, there's four points regarding harm. First, this court in Cochran versus SEC said that being subjected to an ultra vires proceeding is itself sufficient injury to support a finding that a matter is ripe for review. That is to be sufficient. The order itself is going to trigger a lengthy and expensive process. We know that because the ALJ started that process before this court issued the stay. Involved discovery, months of process. There's also other related harms here. It encroaches on the state court's power to determine damage claims. Know that FERC is not itself issuing damages, but at the end of the day, what the landowner wants is a federally issued certificate of what their damages are, so they can march to state court and ask that amount be awarded. So it's not entirely awarding it, but it's a half step in the encroaching on the state traditional powers.
But is a half step enough? I mean, so one thing I'm grappling with, I guess, is the practical effect may be that here comes a cost number that the ALJ develops and all that, and perhaps Sandy Creek will go right to state court and ask for that amount in damages. But we don't know any of that per Judge Haynes's point right now. It may be that what the ALJ determines is that the costs are advantageous for one option or the other, and it actually helps midship. So how, where's the harm?
The cost determination is neither helpful or harmful to midship. A midship is going to perform the work one way or the other. It doesn't, you know, it, the commission needs to decide whether our plan, if performed, would satisfy the work. If not, it should point out what in addition needs to be done, and we just need to do the work. There's no
issue. Let me ask you this. If we were to conclude that we lack jurisdiction, so we just dismiss that, so we didn't comment on anything else, y'all go have this, the ALJ issues a number, and then Sandy Creek takes that to state court and argues that that's the right number. But in the meantime, you do appeal to us, and we find that that went beyond their authority, and we find it was improper. Would the state court find that admissible if we reversed and said it was not proper at that point? Would it be admissible in state court?
I assume that it would take that into account, but there's nothing that's more final at that point. The question of whether there is a legitimate process here that they can even consider costs is never going to be more ripe than it is today.
No, I'm just wondering whether the state court can or would admit an order of an ALJ that we reversed and found was ultra-virus.
It's not clear what a state court would do with that. It's obviously that the landowner wants this order in order to either put settlement pressure on.
Does it matter to whether this actually harms you at this stage? I mean, whether it's right, because you know, I realize that we don't know exactly what any judge is ever going to rule on anything, but what is the law? I mean, can they admit something like that? Is that admissible? Has anybody even looked at that or thought about that? Because, again, I've been a state trial judge. I'm not going to run around admitting stuff that's been found to be ultra-virus and whatever. I mean, that just doesn't seem proper.
I mean, it's not even clear under FERC's arguments that we would be allowed to appeal at the end of a cost determination. They would say, well, you need to perform, and if you don't perform, you can be sanctioned by us, and then you can appeal that. There's not, they wouldn't treat that as an appealable order.
So you're saying FERC doesn't think the ALJ ruling is appealable?
That the ALJ ruling regarding costs would be to, you know, what is that doing? It's not, they're not requiring us to go to, you know, to the store and pay a particular amount of money to do it. The only thing they can order us to do is to comply with the certificate, which is to perform the work that is specified in the certificate.
The problem with that is that they surely are empowered under the grant of the Congress make all the factual studies and data to inform its obligation under the certificate itself. And in their judgment, they would like to know what some of these cost factors are. That doesn't bind anybody to anything else. Contrary to your brief, which I could not follow, you're talking about the state court proceedings, and you drop in a footnote that, well, under Oklahoma law, which I assume would be the state court remedy, the only thing that can be recovered here is the difference between the diminished value of the state itself. But that sounds to me like a very powerful state court remedy. So if I were a landowner, and I'm not a stranger to juries, and a good Oklahoma jury, I might want them in the box rather than FERC.
I think
I look at that, what you cited as a big a limitation of the damages. That doesn't strike me as being a limitation at all, because what is the measure of the diminished value of it and so forth?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, what a state court will award, and it should be providing remedies like a jury trial that are in state court is you know, yet to be seen if they do seek a state remedy. But the only question before this court is whether this cost determination is actually related to assessing whether we're performing and whether our plan to perform the compliance work under the certificate is proper. The cost is simply irrelevant to that. So I think your question all presupposes that, well, they'd like to know it.
Well, come back. So
we're out of time, but Judge Higginbotham, if you have another question, go ahead.
Let me come back to my colleague's other question. How are you injured by a number that they come up with that this is what it would cost an item? What you're talking about, costing is not just a pure number. You're talking about the cost of doing X, Y, Z, whatever the particular mechanical processes are, and those are costs out. And so I'm having trouble understanding how that is an injurious to you.
I would go back to the argument, and that the FERC itself in May last year recognized it has no authority to even assess the amount of damages. It's outside its authority. And if that's right, and we agree that it's right, then they shouldn't be arguing to the contrary. Under this court's decision in Cochran versus SEC, this whole proceeding is ultra vires, is not supported by statutory authority. Even if FERC would like to know it, their authority is limited to the authorities that Congress gave by statute. And under this court's decision, that being subjected to that ultra vires proceeding by itself is sufficient injury. And the process itself is going to be long and lengthy with discovery. You know, so our injury is not concerned about the outcome of the cost determination. If so, we would have waited until that cost determination. That would have made this case much more like the energy case or the Total case, where you have to wait to the end of the process to see if we're aggrieved. Our aggrievement, our injury is being subjected to this process that has not been permitted by Congress. When Congress wants to provide cost role
to— Okay, Mr. Loeb, I'm sorry. I've let you go past the time, but
thank you, Your Honor.
Getting a little long. So you've saved some time for rebuttal. We appreciate that. So next we will hear from FERC, Ms. Banta.
Good morning, Carol Banta for the commission. First, we want to thank the court for holding this argument by Zoom rather than at the July session. We appreciate that. This case is not about an improper proceeding, and it's not a structural challenge to the commission's process. To be clear, there is an ongoing administrative law judge proceeding going on right now, which is not challenged. Midship itself has submitted extensive technical expert testimony on groundwater, erosion control, drainage, their soil science. The commission asked the administrative law judge to sort through the Midship and Sandy Creek did not even agree on what steps need to be done. And the commission, before deciding whether Midship's steps would comply with its certificate of public convenience and necessity obligations, or whether Sandy Creek was right about any of it, the commission asked the administrative law judge, who's an expert in sorting through competing expert testimony and fact-finding, to do a fact-finding proceeding about what steps are required, and this would be a recommendation in the form of a report to the commission about what the commission should say the required steps are. And then the commission would decide whether Midship was in compliance with its certificate or violating it. So the administrative law judge right now is holding a proceeding. Both parties have Midship Sandy Creek and commission trial staff have been submitting evidence in June and July. I believe the briefs are due in August, and the administrative law judge will write a report in October that the commission will then consider whether to adopt those findings of fact. But the administrative law judge is taking in all of this expert testimony on what the steps are. What is stayed here and what's on appeal before this court is whether that administrative law judge could have also been considering the cost of each of those steps. And this is not a damages number. This is, if one party thinks that you need to put this much topsoil in and get it from here, and this other party believes a different method. It's so highly technical, it's hard for me to even give examples. There's a lot about ponding and erosion on the banks of the Sandy Creek. And I struggled to understand the testimony myself when I was reading it, but they don't agree on the basic steps. And that was the key thing that the commission sent to the administrative law judge.
Let's talk about the cost issue. I mean, if I have a friend who's getting married and the exact same item that I wanted to give is on sale at store A and overpriced at store B, so I go to store A and buy it and give it to the friend, does that in any way detract from the wonderfulness of the gift I gave, the fact that I spent less on it than I would have spent at store B? I mean, what difference does that make if it's exactly the same item?
Well, and this is for the commission to be able to compare the items, because they might not be exactly the same. You might get topsoil put back over the right of way, but is it the right depth? Was it brought in the right way? Is it the right kind?
Why does that matter based on cost? Why?
It's just,
you know, I think it's super important to fix the Sandy Creek lot, but I understand there's a disagreement on that. And so why can't the ALJ just determine you need to get topsoil from Italy because the topsoil from Spain does not work in Oklahoma? And if that determination was made, why would it matter that the topsoil from Italy is more expensive than the topsoil from Spain? I have no idea if any of that's true. I'm just a hypo.
It might not matter. If it truly weren't similar, the cost might not matter. But if the outcomes are similar, the idea that the commission has no ability to even consider cost. We can imagine, here's a hypothetical scenario, that you have a pipeline and a landowner who don't agree on a certain way to remediate the property. And there are two ways that get to a similar outcome. One of them is enormously more expensive than the other, but the commission does not know that because it's prohibited to consider the cost at all. And it orders the pipeline to do the one. It turns out maybe the outcome is slightly better, but the cost is off the charts. But the commission doesn't know that. It is a certainty that
the problem here, it's not so much whether to ban or allow hearing about the cost, letting an expert say, well, that version is really, really expensive. It's that the ALJ is supposed to determine that, supposed to actually decide that.
It's supposed to determine the cost of each step or each method. Yes, but that is for the commission to look and say, you are or are not in violation of your certificate.
Let the ALJ consider that as just one of many pieces of evidence. You know, experts get up and talk on forever. And one thing they say is, Midship's expert says, well, Sandy Creek's idea is just like ours, except theirs costs three times as much. I could absolutely say that. I can tell you right now, there's no question about that. The question is, can the ALJ be mandated to say, oh, I order that this is what the cost is?
Well, I would submit that the first is really what the commission did. And I'm looking at paragraph 13 and the ordering paragraph in the hearing order, that what petitioners called the ALJ order at JA 179-180, where the commission says the most efficient way to sort everything out is to give this to an administrative law judge. The commission said something similar about why it went to the administrative law judge in the rehearing order in paragraph 14 on JA 231. But coming back to what the commission said is, number one, in its directive to the administrative law judge, determine the method and scope of the work activities. And then secondarily, number two is the reasonable cost to complete such activities.
Right, so it's an actually mandating an order on the cost, not just considering the cost as listening to a bunch of experts give testimony and this and that, and here's my problem with this and my problem with that. And the Sandy Creek expert can say, well, the midship people are only arguing that because it's so much cheaper, but it's a mess. I mean, all of this discussion of cost, I don't think anybody's saying that can't come into evidence. I think the question is, does the ALJ have to actually determine the cost to complete the activity it decides is the right activity?
Well, when it comes into, I'm not sure it is clear at this point whether it is allowed to come into evidence, but what the commission wants is a report where the administrative law judge has sorted through competing stories and competing expert testimony and competing facts, sort through it and give us, the commission, a report that has marshaled all those facts and sifted through and found what the administrative law judge believes to be the answers.
But counsel, none of that really relates to cost. And per Judge Haynes's point, this order sets forth the ALJ's marching orders, which includes specifically determine what the cost of this is. And so I appreciate the logic that you're setting forth in terms of why this might be helpful. So here's the question. If this is so unremarkable, why does the dissenting commissioner, if I recall, call this an unprecedented order? Does FERC do this all the time?
No, Because
so why
frankly,
not? If it's so unremarkable, if this is just another aspect of fact gathering, why here as opposed to dozens and dozens of cases, I guess, where it could be helpful before?
I'm not aware of another case that has been sent to an ALJ to sort through. I mean, these cases just in the past have not been litigated to this extent before the commission.
But has the FERC before ordered ALJ or other inquiry into costs of different remedial measures or options?
In this context, I'm not aware of any. No,
so
in a dispute between a pipeline
order.
And a landowner. I'm sorry.
It is an unprecedented order then.
But not because we've done something similar and took it a step further. We haven't done this, to my knowledge, at all in terms of sending the litigants to an administrative law judge to consider expert testimony.
Why can't this just be changed to say you can consider expert testimony, including expert testimony about the cost, but the ALJ is not ordered to and will not state once they decide, okay, you're going to go get topsoil from Italy. They don't have to say, and that costs $1 million. They just rule on it, okay? They've heard evidence. I can tell you right now, if all the experts agreed on everything, I don't think we'd have a problem here. I think we'd have a dispute. So the experts are going to disagree on the cost. They're going to disagree on what makes sense. They're going to be disagreeing on a lot of things. And I'm respectful of that. That's fine. So the ALJ can just say, get the topsoil from Italy. Thank you very much. But under this order, if they follow this order, this JA-179, they have to say, and that costs $1 million or whatever the number is. And that's the dispute that we're sitting here with. So why can't you all agree to just put on all the evidence you need to put on, but the ALJ just determines what is the method and scope remaining?
I'm not sure the commission would have a problem with that. I think our understanding was that the commission—
Why didn't you guys resolve that at that level? Because experts are going to testify things like, well, Sandy Creek is only making that argument because they want a bunch of money. And Sandy Creek's expert's going to say, well, Midship's just trying to save money by not putting in the proper topsoil. That kind of evidence, I'm guessing, I mean, I don't know, I'm not going to pretend I've done a FERC hearing, but I that kind of evidence seems to me to be likely. But that is separate, as I said, from the ALJ deciding, here is the reasonable cost of topsoil.
Well, and all the commission wants to know is what steps are reasonable. And I think the answer to your question about why if we have somehow misunderstood what the petitioners are arguing, it's because of the ripeness problem here. There has been no final commission order here. We sent it to an administrative law judge. We had a rehearing order on that. The commission declined to stay the proceeding, and we ended up with an interlocutory appeal to this court. So the exact question of what the commission will do with this information at the end of the process is entirely unlitigated and entirely appropriate for litigation at a later stage.
This number two is an order to the ALJ to state a dollar amount. Okay, and that is what I understand to be what Midship is so upset about. Okay, and obviously they can tell us on rebuttal if I misunderstood that. But that is what they complained about. And that's because they don't want them to fill up that piece of paper and go to the Oklahoma State Court and say, see, we get $1 million, ha ha ha. You know, that's what they're trying to avoid, right?
Well, they have also argued that the commission cannot consider the cost, and that the commission is strictly limited to saying, here are the steps, do them. And my understanding is that they argue that the commission shouldn't even consider it, can't consider it, that they in their brief, their argument is that the commission should only be looking at what steps are required, regardless of what they cost, order the pipeline to do it, and the pipeline will do it whatever it costs.
Well, but the dissenting commissioner says that, and I think the commission itself has said it has no authority to assess costs or award damages. And I'll give you that there's a difference between awarding damages and computing the cost, but it can certainly be argued that this is ultra-virus. And so their point is that once this is done, once this goes forward and the ALJ comes up with the express cost determination that the FERC has ordered it to do, then that bell can't be unrung, as the stay order said. In other words, that number's now out there, and the FERC had no authority to require the ALJ to compute it. I mean, so how can they challenge it later at the end of the process if, I mean, FERC may come out at some point, I guess, as I apprehend it, and say, well, we're not going to consider what the ALJ did with regard to cost. We're just going to order option A instead of option B based on the ALJ's analysis. I'm not even sure Midship can then challenge the cost determination or the exercise of what is arguably an ultra-virus power.
Well, the commission wants the cost information so it can determine what is reasonable to require. And what I started to say before is if we had a case where we refused to even consider that, it's a certainty that we would end up in court with a pipeline arguing that the commission's requirements were unreasonable because the costs are outlandish and would be passed through to ratepayers. And we would have no defense to such an argument if we, I guess our defense, if we were precluded from considering costs, would be that we're precluded from considering costs. But the commission—
If I may, let me ask you a follow-up question. Statutorily, we are granted that as an appellate court, I guess we'd sort of de facto sit against the Tenth Circuit for this Oklahoma case, but we are the Fifth. But we have the statutory authority to direct and the agency as to the uses they can make of this, and in other words, to tell them that you simply make it, there's nothing there. It releases the client insofar as you may consider cost in making your decisions, of making your own decisions yourself in the process itself. In other words, you don't need a big number to throw out there. You have that cost to compare various things in discharge of your obligation to be reasonable. So the reasonableness of cost, everybody agrees, is certainly a factor. In other words, we can cabin from here of the ongoing processes. Now, what do you think about that?
I think that's basically what the commission itself has said, because the commission has said, and this goes back to Judge Wilson's question, the second part of the question as well.
Well, articulate that I've heard to be based on that, if it's acceptable. Like, well, yeah. Articulate exactly what
The commission has said many times in these orders and in the order that Mr. Loeb pointed to that it cannot, will not, does not assess damages. And in addition, the Midship pointed out in its reply brief on page 30 a number of factors that a court would take into account that the commission is not going to hear about: comparative fault, mitigation of damages. So I think any state trial court or a federal district court, if that's where the case were, would look at costs, just raw cost numbers that the commission came up with. And I think it sells trial courts short to suggest that they would rubber stamp that as a damages figure when the commission itself has said repeatedly, this is not a damages figure. We are not assessing damages. We can't assess damages. We don't intend to assess damages.
But counsel, take away the label damages and say with this cost, and the question is, what use do you make of cost? And I think it's fair to say that you certainly are enabled to consider cost in making your own decisions about what is necessary or not necessary, whatever else, in the mix itself, or particular items. In other words, back up in discharging your duty of reasonableness, you can consider the relative cost yourself, but you don't come up, they're not going to produce an end number of any kind. That information is there, and for them to order what goes forward. In other words, they're going to make a decision that going forward, the agency will, that this is what needs to be done, and you go forward with it, and the midship had. What they've got is an order to do these jobs, and there's not an abstract number. So in other words, you utilize cost in your inside making your decisions about what needs to be done, and then that then you make the, then you enter the order that this is what's got to be done.
We're fine with that. It's just without we wanted the ALJ to be able to sort through competing evidence to make a report.
The expert, as you described it, is going through trying to determine what needs to be done, not to be done, and what's reasonable. And in making that decision, they can consider costs or whatever any person would reasonably want to know. In other words, if it's A and B, and you can accomplish the same thing, reasonably they ought to go with a cheaper cost. In other words,
okay, as you're describing that, I think
because your time is up. You have a sentence you want to say?
No, we just ask that the administrative law judge be able to produce a useful report for the commission to fulfill its own obligations.
Okay, thank you. Now, Mr. Bookbinder, you have 4 minutes.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I represent Sandy Creek Farms, whose property is at the heart of this dispute. I think we can eliminate a large issue right now, which is quite simply assuming FERC issues the appropriate order and Midship actually complies and cleans up its mess. There's nothing for Sandy Creek Farms to go to state court about. This is all about restoring Sandy Creek's property. Assuming FERC issues the right order and Sandy Creek complies, that's it. There is no further issue of restoration. We wouldn't
be
going
to state court. The argument that Midship has made is that y'all don't really want them on your property anymore. You just want to be able to go recover the money and maybe repair it yourself or maybe just keep the money. That's their argument.
No, we're not interested in keeping anyone's money. We're interested in repairing the property and what we've.
But they said you haven't let them on to get it done.
Most recently, after two years of them making the problem worse, of hiring cut rate contractors who've actually made the problem worse, we finally had enough of that. We weren't going to let them make it even worse on top of that. That's why it's a good idea for the ALJ to make the determination. If the ALJ says, hey, you got to do this, 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 and this, and I want this, 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 and this result, and Midship complies, there's nothing to go to court about. We will let them on the property to do what FERC tells them to do.
But how does cost even enter in?
Cost is a proxy for veracity in this thing. We have had years of Midship, to put it plainly, botching the job. And
but per Judge Haynes's point earlier with counsel, why can't the experts just hash that out? This mode of remediation is preferable to this mode of remediation because of XYZ substantive factors. Why does cost even enter in? And I mean, more to the point, does FERC have the authority to expressly develop a cost assessment?
Because as you break down each stage from here's the result to here's steps A, B, C, D, and sub-steps of each of those steps, there are different methodologies to be used, different ways the contractors will do each of those things. And it's important for the ALJ to say, hold it, you say this step is going to cost $8 million. Midship says it's going to cost $200,000. Okay, let's figure out why there's such a huge cost disparity. It is a proxy for...
Well, why can't that be done the way I said, just as evidence that's admitted or objected to and then decided, okay, we'll let it in, blah, 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 but not an actual order that says number one, blah, 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 number two, $1 million. That's the number two entry that has to say a dollar amount, as opposed to the number one entry that says you need to put in some topsoil and you need to repair this gate, is not at issue. And that's going forward as apparently is the case. And no one's arguing that. Well, so why do we need number two?
As long as the ALJ is actually allowed to consider and make findings based on those costs, that's fine.
I don't know that they should be making findings in expressly that way. What I'm saying is if an expert says, the reason that the Midship expert said this is just because that's really cheap, but it's also sloppy. That sand just flops away in the next time that there's wind. okay, that's the sort of thing experts say and that this ALJ can certainly consider, but it isn't their ruling, oh, you got to pay more than floppy sand.
No, is if they have to explain their ruling, Your Honor, flip it over. What happens if it was the landowner coming in and the pipeline company saying, whoa, 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 we, you know, the landowner is saying, don't consider costs, and the pipeline company is saying, yes, do consider the costs. That would be the normal situation here.
But again, I think this back and forth of considering it is a separate question from ruling on it, which is, you know, there's an order that only has two orders, two things you have to do. And number two is assessing that number. So I think, I mean, to me, maybe I'm focusing on that too much, but that, you know, when I was a state trial court, if I was ordered by a higher court to do something, I wanted to do exactly what I was told to do. So
that's let me go back to your and answer her question. What you just said, I thought what you said earlier was so long as they simply consider cost and discharging their duty, you'll be the beneficiaries of that. And you don't, so that means that you don't have to come up and cost out with some big number. In doing their own evaluations of what's reasonable and so forth, they can come up with an answer, and that's it.
Your Honor, that would be fine. We don't need a final, we don't need a separate section of the ALJ's report saying, I find that the cost of remediation is X or Y or Z. We don't need that. We need the ALJ to be able to consider the costs and make decisions based on
cost. Consider the costs, and then it's to do X and do Y.
If y'all were in New Orleans, I would tell y'all to walk out into the public area and just talk to each other about this, because it sounds like you all agree we don't need this number. We just need the consideration of what's right and what's wrong. Well, why are we here? Have you all talked about that?
We've had extensive discussions with Midship, and Midship has rejected our proposals as too expensive.
Okay, but I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about settling whether you need topsoil or not. I'm talking about this issue. Have you all discussed that the ALJ can consider a lot of stuff, but ultimately simply rules you need to put in topsoil from Italy. 100 pounds of topsoil from Italy, period.
Yes.
As opposed to the reasonable cost of topsoil that needs to be put in, or the reasonable cost of the remediations is $1 million. Those are two separate orders, in my opinion. And it seems like y'all all agree on the first one. What it is, but how it should look.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you don't seem to need the second one, so why are we here? I'm sorry. I mean, I don't mean to be...
I suggest you ask Midship's counsel why exactly we're here.
Well, because we've got the number two. But Ms. Banta doesn't seem to think we need the number two, but that came from FERC. So that's why I'm just a little bit confused.
No, and we do not believe that we need a separate, and this will therefore cost X million dollars. No, so long as the ALJ can consider cost in determining each step of what needs to be done, that would be fine. That would give the ALJ the information needed for the ALJ to do their job.
Okay. Well, your time is up. Let's go back to Mr. Loeb and let me ask him that. Now, I'm not saying that you think cost matters. I understand you think it's irrelevant. But I guess I'm saying if an expert witness talks about that as part of their overall evaluation of store A versus store B, why can't they do that, provided that the ALJ is not ordered to say $1 million is the right number?
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, I think there seems to be some consensus that the order to determine costs here is erroneous. And then now is a question in the other part of the order of what the ALJ can do. And responding to your question directly, if the ALJ in that process should look at whether what has been proposed by Midship would comply with the certificate requirements. So we'd say we're going to dig down 6 feet or 10 feet to look for rocks. We're going to put this type of topsoil. It's going to be grade A as the certificate requires. We're going to, you know, buy it from this supplier. And they can argue that's for whatever reason is unreliable or unacceptable. I don't think price bears in it. It could be prior performance, or whether when we say it's grade A, it really isn't grade A. They can make those kind of arguments.
Expert said You know, the only reason they're asking for grade A is because that's really cheap. Grade B is what everybody else does that, and it's more expensive. And they just said that, as opposed to the ALJ determining the right number. Why is that not admissible in evidence? Well, why is that even something we decide at this point?
This is not an open-ended reasonableness determination. It's whether we're meeting the standards set out in the certificate of compliance and the guidance, which lays out all the standards. We, you know, so it does it require grade A topsoil? We're using grade A topsoil. They can assess that without looking at the cost. But ultimately, the ALJ is separately ordered to determine the cost of not only the performance by Midship, and this is performance.
And I understand that, but if you took out number two, would that necessarily mean that no one could ever mention anything at all about what the cost was of anything? If any expert said that, they should be thrown in prison because they are violating the law.
Look, if they wanted to cross-examine that we're not really using grade A topsoil because we're paying too little for it and we're therefore not credible, I guess you can theorize some way that those kind of things might come in cross-examination. But FERC not only ordered the ALJ to assess the cost of Midship performance, but also to assess the cost of self-performance by Sandy Creek, that the landowner performed this work. Now, FERC has no statutory power to assess costs and has no power to order us to allow Sandy Creek to do the work itself or to pay.
You make that argument, but no one is proposing they do that. I mean, that's in your brief throughout, but that's a big jump from where we are.
It's in the order. It's in the order requiring the ALJ. And you have to ask yourself, why is it in the order that FERC is ordering the ALJ not to determine just our performance, because we submit a plan, you can see whether it's satisfactory, whether it'll meet all the standards. But they're also saying, also assess the cost of if Sandy Creek just performs it themselves. That is completely beyond the authority.
Counsel, please. What you're hearing is that something that to me is quite different. What you apparently not willing to accept that they in making their own determinations of reasonableness that they can consider cost, and then they tell you that we've determined it's reasonable. It's to do A, and you do it because that's what you were arguing before. We just do what they say, period. But forget cost. Well, they have an obligation too that has to be accommodated to reasonable, and they have a statutory grant of authority to consider all facts and data necessary to implement that. And all they're doing is doing common sense and looking at internally the cost. We have the power to confine that activity to it. But you're not willing to. I'm not asking you to agree to that, but it seems to me that answers every one of your arguments.
I mean, if this court were to vacate the part of the order saying that the ALJ is to determine the cost and to say that in assessing how much, whether our plan will work or not and how much work is left to be done, it's not completely forbidden for it to consider costs, I think, you know, that would certainly be an improvement of where we are.
They're free to consider cost, and they're experts that make their decisions and discharge their duty to consider internally the recommendations that they make.
But let me just make the point. This is not an open-ended reasonableness determination. There's an order out there, and it's a question of whether we're in the process of complying with that order by restoring the land. And I think Judge
Bates. But that kind of detail, whether they mess that up, that is something you have to appeal after the fact, not before. I mean.
And they have remedies for that. If we do not, at the end of the day, we say, look, we're going to do steps A, B, and C. And they say, yeah, if you do those things, they will satisfy the certificate. And if we fail to do it, they can issue an order to show cause. No one has found that we're out of compliance yet. You know, they can order show cause why we shouldn't be penalized. They can penalize. They have other, you know, very severe arrows in their quiver to punish us, to make us comply. But,
Mr. Loeb, I just kind of feel like we're being put in a trial court here. But anyway, I appreciate everybody's argument. It was great to hear from all of you. And I think Zoom worked fine for this. But we appreciate you all. The case is under consideration now. And we are going to end the Zoom oral argument now.
Thank you, Your Honor.